The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The spell you're under has been broken by Chris Jericho. The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride.
Wanted to kick it off with a rockin' tune from the Sin and Bones record. That is the title track, Sin and Bones, by Fozzy, my band. Wanted to play it for all of you because you're here because you want to rock. Metallica, Robert Trujillo. I got such a jam-packed show for you. I'm not going to waste time telling you anything else. I want to just get to it because Rob is one of the greatest bass players for one of the greatest bands of all time, Metallica. He's working on a very cool documentary project about one of the bassists that most influenced him, Jaco Pastorius. Notorious. He's also got some details about where Metallica stands with their new studio album, some great tales about their tour to Antarctica. They're the only band that's played seven continents, all seven continents. That's Metallica for you. They do what they want, when they want, because they're Metallica. He's also got plenty of stories from his days in Suicidal Tendencies, Infectious Grooves, Ozzy, We Trade Lars Imitations. There's so much stuff coming up. And also, I want to give you guys a quick thanks to all of the Talk is Jericho sponsors, including Amazon. Thanks to them, and a big thanks to you guys for doing your online shopping through my Amazon links. Easiest way to support Talk is Jericho. You just go to podcast1.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. Every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada. You get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon. You can get Metallica records, posters, shirts, books, whatever you want. You get Death Magnetic, their last record. You get Through the Never, their amazing IMAX movie that they made just a couple years ago. You got to check that out. Also, you can pick up the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? The new single is Do You Want to Start a War? It's all over the radio. The video is available on YouTube, starring Arina Viranova. She's a gorgeous, gorgeous Playboy playmate. She's in the video with me. She didn't talk to me, but she was in the video. I can also get my new book, the third New York Times bestseller that I've written. It's called The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. Listen, you want to check it out? People are saying it's the best Jericho book that I've done. You be the judge. You check it out. Listen, you can buy anything you want. I bought some new Trace knee pads today on Amazon. I bought a scarf with some sequins in it for the live show. So many cool things I want to check out. I bought the Macho Man Randy Savage new DVD. That's very, very interesting. Macho Man, of course, getting into the WWE Hall of Fame. Huge, huge news. So much stuff you can check out on Amazon. But the truth is, when you use my Amazon links, you buy whatever you want. Not going to cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. So if you happen to be doing some online shopping, do it through my Amazon links and help out this show in the process. You go to podcast1.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. Bookmark it so you can get those links in one easy click. All right. A little bit more business. The Y2J WWE Winter Tour continues. It's been such a huge success. Had great shows last week in St. Louis, Las Vegas, Houston. And they continue this Friday, the 23rd, in Trenton, New Jersey. It'll be your last chance to see me in the ring for a while. And also your last chance to ever see me or anybody else from the WWE in East Rutherford, New Jersey at Meadowlands. It's called the Izod Center. That's on Saturday, the 24th. They are tearing down the Izod Center. It's going to be a sad, sad day. But come on down. Check it out for the last time. I know Dave LaGreca, my buddy from Busted Open, is going to be there. Everyone's going to be there. It's going to be a huge, huge, crazy, crazy night. And also the next day on the 25th in Philadelphia at Dave and Buster's, it's the great debate, Eric Bischoff versus Bruce Pritchard, in a debate about the Monday Night Wars with yours truly moderating it. You get your tickets for that at rfvideo.com. You can also come meet me at a special VIP meet and greet at 10 a.m. on Dave and Buster's, Columbus Avenue in Philadelphia, rfvideo.com. For all information, you're not going to want to miss the great debate. It's going to be huge. And then the Y2J Winter Tour continues. Edmonton, Calgary, Jacksonville, Canton, Tampa, Fort Myers, Madison Square Garden, Toronto, Buffalo. Go to WWE.com for all information on that. All right. Time to get down to business. You know we got Robert Trujillo on, but before we put Robert on, I got another special guest. I don't know if you've seen this YouTube video or not, but there's a two-year-old little boy named Beckett Sage who can identify any pro wrestler's theme just by hearing a few notes. And I heard about this from his dad. I saw the video. I didn't think we'd be able to. I didn't think it was real. I didn't think the kid could actually do this. He is a wunderkind. He's a prodigy. He reminds me of Ash the Fish Expert when Ash the Fish Expert was two and could name any shark that there was. But I saw Beckett do his video, and I wanted to try and get him into the studio to see if he could do it in person. I did, and this is what happened. We're here with the Wexell family. It's Evan and Kelly and their son, Beckett. And Beckett has become an internet sensation. How old is he?
He's 2 3/4.
He'll be three in April.
Three in April.
Yeah.
And he has a superpower of he is able to identify any WWE wrestler's theme song within seconds.
Yes.
Of you playing the theme. And you were showing me a little bit of it before. There is no picture of the guys on the screen. It's just completely by listening.
Right, 2 seconds and he's got it.
How did you figure this out that he could do this?
I think we were just like watching wrestling just every Monday. He would just be sitting with me. Then he would start, like about 6 months ago, he started picking up what the actual, he'd match the music and the wrestler.
Uh-huh.
So then when we were just home one night, I'm like, let me just, father-son time, let's just film him.
Uh-huh.
Doing like 20 songs in 2 minutes. We did it. I held on to it and then I put it up there and I like a couple days, you know, got some good traction, like maybe 2,000 in 3 days. But then once WWE saw it and they posted it to, you know, their endless followers and Facebook likers and YouTubers, it blew up.
How did you get the WWE's attention that he had done this?
Sometimes it's really just it's the reason superstars tweet their retweet fans things. You send it to the right people and they retweet it, and then all of a sudden that gets retweeted 200 times and
they got a hold of it.
It is like a virus.
Actually, Stephanie got a hold of it
and
she retweeted it, and then it exploded, and then Vince McMahon actually, he said something about it on Twitter too.
Well, he wrote his own tweet about the video. He made like a link to the video, hashtag PG.
And that he's the youngest fan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so now you're kind of like WWE endorsed.
Yes, we are, I guess, hopefully I'm the official father figure of WWE.
They definitely have brought Beckett into the family. Stephanie was like, he's in our family now.
Did they bring you to, you mentioned they brought you to Stanford?
Right, because we're both from Long Island, so we happen to be going back home that day, that week, and Monday we got into New York, and then Wednesday it was blowing up. So I was like, let me email somebody and see if they want to do a little, you know, PR tour thing.
Sure.
So they did. We met up on a Thursday. We got, you know, photoed on the roof, and then we got led around the hallways and in the cafeteria and all that. And then we met Stephanie, and then she's like, you know, have you met my husband? And we weren't planning to meet him, but then she brought us up to him, and you know, they were taking photos the entire time. And we actually, I should have brought a copy of our holiday card. We made it where it's like, this holiday season, look around and always know you can upgrade. And it's a picture of Beckett with Stephanie and Triple H as his new family. As like, we're out of the picture.
You're done.
He is the authority's offspring now.
And has he ever been to a wrestling show before?
Yes.
Yes. We just went to Staples House Show.
Okay.
House Show Staples. Because that's where we saw Paul Stanley in the first row. It was him and his wife and his son. And
were you guys sitting in the front row too?
Yeah, we were in the front row.
Right on.
It was crazy. We had Randy Orton's girlfriend was next to us, I think, in the front row. But it was cool. Like Luke Harper and Ziggler led off the show. And like Harper looks right at Beckett. And he's like, this one's for you, kid. And then he drops an elbow on Dolph.
Who's Beckett's favorite?
Early
Hi, Beckett.
Early on, it was probably Bo Dallas, because he kept saying all you have to do is believe. That was from the first video. So I would always do that. If he ever got cranky, I would be like, Beckett, all you have to do is believe. But
Beckett, do you believe? He's like, what are you looking at?
He's like, it's better to be.
He wouldn't stop talking before, and then Mom gave him a little video game there to play.
He likes the talking Tom, where it like repeats whatever you say.
Yeah. So Bo Dallas is his favorite, but you're saying, let me get this straight. I haven't seen the videos.
Okay.
And you're telling me that he can identify any wrestler by the theme song within a few seconds.
Less. Past, present, or future, or then, now, and forever, as they say.
Sometimes
on
it's
the signature.
Literally the first note.
Really?
The
so you're saying he could do this now?
Yeah. Like if the
really?
If you start to hear a chainsaw, he would say Paige within like 0.3 seconds.
Really?
Yes.
Well, what if I say I wanted you to prove it?
We'll do it. We got. Well, yeah, let's break
Becky,
it out.
Are you
up
for it?
Okay, we'll put a laptop in here. Becca, do you want to talk about some wrestlers? Yeah. Do you know who I am?
Picture.
Yeah. All right, well, let's try it out.
The picture. I am a girl. Paige. The Ziggler. Oh. The Ziggler. We the people.
Jack Swagger.
The man. Now. Rock.
Who's that, Beckett?
Brock Lesnar.
Oh. Brock Lesnar.
Bo Dallas. Yeah.
Bo Dallas? You know, I don't even know Bo Dallas.
His favorite.
The Undertaker.
Oh. The Undertaker.
Wow.
Starting to sing the song, actually. Who is this?
Who Who's that, Beckett?
Randy Orton.
Oh, good.
Beckett Bryan.
Oh, good.
Daniel Bryan.
Kane.
Oh. Kane, that's good.
Triple H.
That's right.
All right. Who's this?
Chris Jericho.
Yeah, good. There you go. Yeah.
Who's that?
Who's that? Let's see.
Sheamus.
Yeah,
Sheamus. Good. John Cena.
Wow. Okay, let's do another one.
Cena. Mick Flair.
Okay.
Ric Flair, that's right. Mick Flair.
CM Punk.
Okay. Wow, old CM Punk,
yep,
too.
That's the old one.
Choco Sink.
Okay, let's do a couple more.
Who was that?
Jake the Snake.
Jake the Snake.
You're the Warrior.
Oh.
That's right.
Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels.
That's good, yeah.
It's McMahon.
Oh, okay. Who is this?
Goldust.
Okay. Goldust.
Yeah.
I don't care what y'all say.
Trish Stratus.
Trish Stratus, good.
Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
New Age Outlaws.
New Age Outlaws.
You think you know me?
Edge.
Yeah,
Edge.
Bushwhackers.
Just wanted to hear him say Bushwhackers.
Bushwhackers.
Vitaya.
And who else?
Bruce.
Yes, same music. Good.
Good. Really Dollar Man.
Yeah.
Rey Mysterio.
Good.
Who's that?
Rey Mysterio.
Rey Mysterio, yeah. Man.
Diesel.
Yes.
Who is it?
Diesel.
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 That's good, Beckett.
And
Diesel.
And our newest inductee.
Macho Man.
Yeah, Macho Man Randy Savage. There we go.
Oh, that is absolutely unbelievable. Beckett, you're amazing. You're a superstar. Look, I'm clapping
Beckett.
For you.
Beckett.
I'm clapping for you. He's got a big smile on his face. That is the most incredible thing I've heard. It reminds me of my son, Ash.
Yes.
When he was two, I call him Ash the Fish Expert because he knew every shark. At the age of two, like Beckett does, he would say, like, Wallengang shark or nurse shark or lemon shark or cookie cutter shark. You never know what it's going to be to catch kids' interest and why they're going to just jump on this like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Evan's really happy that this is what caught his interest.
Exactly. Does he know what he wants to be when he grows up?
No idea. I mean, he's already doing somersaults, like, off the couch, so who knows?
I saw him in there.
I've had him, like... You know, I tweeted Rob Van Dam, and I'm like, this kid's working on his Rolling Thunder. And he actually got to meet RVD because there was like a wrestling-themed comedy show.
Oh, okay.
So he got to meet him afterwards because RVD, I think, headlines it.
That's great.
So,
he's on Talk is Jericho. He's ready to hit the superstardom now.
Oh, he's
Get ready. He's been wearing shades and signing autographs within no time. We appreciate you coming down. The Wexell family here live on Talk is Jericho. Beckett, you're the man.
Woohoo!
Say goodbye.
Yeah!
Oh, yay! All right. How amazing was Beckett? I mean, he wasn't just looking at pictures either. He was listening to the theme songs just off his dad was playing them off of a laptop, and he just heard the songs and named who the wrestler was that came out to those songs within seconds. He's a Wunderkind. Reminds me of Ash the Fish Expert when he was a kid, naming all the sharks. So, so cool. Almost unbelievable. I didn't think Beckett could really do it, but he did. It was very incredible. And speaking of incredible, I've got Robert Trujillo from Metallica coming up.
This is Talk is Jericho.
All right, we're sitting here in the studio across the way from Rob Trujillo, which I used to think your name was Trudgelio when I used to see it in the credits for Infectious Grooves.
Right, yeah. It's funny because the first recording I ever did, which was probably back in 87, I recorded on some weird dance song that never saw the light of day, but they wrote my name on the single, Try Yellow. So it was, T-R-I-L-L-O. Triyello. Triyello.
the first time I wrestled here, like early 90s, I came down, drove from Calgary to Pomona, California to flea market. And they pronounced my name as, and coming to the ring, it was like a Spanish flea market. Chris Erichico.
Erichico.
But what's your full name? I love when you say the full thing.
Well, my real full name or my fictitious, funkified full name?
Well, what's your Sarsippius name? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My name is Roberto Agustin Trujillo Miguel Santiago San Juan Veracruz de Tijuana. And I get people in Mexico saying, hey, man, you know, Roberto from Tijuana or from Veracruz, especially when they're drunk, man. Oh, jeez.
That was pretty pretty rad, that Sarsippius and the original Infectious Grooves.
Yeah.
Did you know all that stuff was going on there when you were recording it?
Well, you know, that was a really kind of just a fun, wild time. Sarsippius and I used to joke around. This was before we ever recorded anything with him, and I remember I had this little house in Venice that I was remodeling myself, just hood rat style, you know, just ripping things, you know, ripping out ceilings and drywall and all that. And he would work with me on that, and then we just started joking around, and I would come up with these funky bass lines, and we'd have these outro. I'd have an outro that was back in the voicemail tape era,
right.
And my outgoing message was me playing like a funky bass line, and then Sarsippius would, you know, leave your message after them, you know, all that stuff, yeah. You know, and we do these skits basically. Uh-huh. And then when the first Infectious album came to be, we decided to experiment with something in the studio, and it was really kind of just, you know, by the seat of our pants kind of improv, and it was really cool. Mike Muir was
did he play Sarsippius?
No, there is a Sarsippius.
Oh, there actually there is a Sarsippius.
Yeah, that was the guy that my buddy who I do construction with, you know, various odd jobs. We're remodeling my place, and we started doing these skits, and then it ended up being on my voicemail tape, and it got.
Oh, so that was really a guy?
Yeah,
I always thought that was Mike Muir just on a voice or something.
And then people started calling my home and leaving. And they wouldn't even leave messages; they just listened to the outgoing, you know, because it would change every week. Yeah. You know, so
I used to. It became like almost a cult thing. Like, I'm so Sarsippius, you dummy.
Yeah, yeah.
I need a hairdresser.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, and that was all improvised,
man. It was one of those things that was so weird and wacky that the kids just latched on it, you know.
Yeah, it was definitely a fun time. Fun time for music and fun time for stuff like that, you know.
Last time I saw you was a side stage, actually behind in the cockpit, Lars's cockpit at Perth Soundwave 2 years ago.
Oh, okay, yeah. And you were jamming there, that's
we
right.
We were playing there, that's right, yeah. And then Lars, the first show I saw, because remember, like, Soundwave is really cool because everyone travels together, at least all of us did. You guys had your own plane, but you do the show and then leave after. So I only got to see two of your gigs. One was on the side, and the other one, Lars is like, come into the cockpit.
Right.
Which was so weird because you're watching it through this grate.
Right.
You know, they can see, like, some people, and I say, oh, there's Rob's ass. It looks cool.
Right, right.
But
now you got to come hang on my side.
That's
man.
Next time. I got to go to Rob's world.
I know. Rob. I know. Lars has got the couches and the vodka and everything. But but there's no one on my side.
We didn't know. Yeah, come on. Now you probably have the most room on your side too.
Yeah.
You guys have nonstop touring, especially internationally.
Yeah.
And something that I just blew my mind, and I haven't got a chance to see the whole documentary yet, is when you guys went to Antarctica to be the only band that ever played on seven continents. That's, I mean, I saw some of the clips, and you were like, was it like a biodome or something like that? What was the mindset behind even doing that show? And tell me about that.
Well, you know, interesting thing about that, before we even set out to do that, I remember we're talking about crazy things that we could do, you know. This conversation was something like that, and James had thought, you know, what, we should play Antarctica, you know. And it was probably half in jest, you know, like just
what else
messing
can we
around.
Do?
Yeah. And lo and behold, a few months later, middle management, you know, sends us an email saying, "Hey, you want to play Antarctica?" You know, it was just kind of a weird thing. I think a lot of that happens. In our world, you know, get these special opportunities, and you know, also we like challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you were familiar with the 30-year anniversary show.
I was there. I saw you there.
Right.
Yeah.
And at the Fillmore. I mean, that was crazy because I remember when Lars asked us, you know, hey, you know, we should try and do something special for the 30-year anniversary. Let's hold, maybe have an event somewhere. We didn't know where it was going to be, but it was like, you know, the concept of flying in, you know, different various
all the
musicians.
Guys that you had done covers of, you're flying the real guys in.
Yeah, you're flying them in from all over, you know, the planet. And that was pretty insane, you know. So, and obviously, a gig like that, no one's making money. It's not like anything that has to do with that. That was for the fans, you know. And that's the one thing I can say about Metallica is – is, you know, it's all about the fans and in doing everything we can, whether it's meet and greets. And of course, you can't meet and greet 30,000 people a gig or 10 or whatever. But, you know, we do the best that we can.
But the thing about that gig with the Metallica 30 that blew my mind is, like you said, obviously no one's making money, but it's something that's never been, as large as something that's never been done before. Some crazy thing we've never seen, so really nutty. But, like, you had four shows. Basically, within the course of, I believe it was 6 or 7 nights.
Right.
And you did 80 songs. I think Seek and Destroy was the one constant, and the rest was a different song.
Right.
So you did 77, 78 songs.
Yeah.
And what was the rehearsal process? I remember I saw you briefly. I did the Zakk Wylde roast, and I saw you briefly. I was like, dude, you're like, man, I don't even know what I was thinking. I don't even know what was going on. Like, how do you rehearse all of these obscure songs and the cover guys? And
well, you really at that point you just got to dive into it, and you don't think about, you know, it's not like how are we going to do this or what, you know, how possible it is. You just have to take it on. I mean, and that's kind of what happened when I joined the band, because my first gig was at San Quentin State Penitentiary, you know, and then I think we jumped on a plane and went down to L.A. To film the
Icon.
MTV Icon thing. So for me, I was just like a deer in the headlights. In fact, Ozzy saw it and he was saying that I looked like a deer in the headlights, literally, because it was just this other crazy tornado universe that I had entered.
You became an icon in one night.
It was that, and was also learning. The funny thing was, we had done a medley of Metallica songs that we had rehearsed, I think, maybe 5 days before or 4 days before. So now processing a medley of songs and then not rehearsing them until you're performing, you know, is just crazy. But that's the kind of universe that I had stepped into at that time. And luckily I was prepared because I did a bit of homework. And
I think there's a lot of trust there, too. They know Rob's going to get it.
Well,
you're a pro.
And the thing is, but if you blow it, it's not good because you're blowing it in front of millions of people.
That's true. In your second gig.
And that's the world and the universe that happens, you know, that I jumped into right off the bat. So Antarctica, you know, is to me just an extension of the journey, but a really great one because that is such a special place. You know, it's really the earth as we know it, but in prime, pristine, untapped,
untouched,
you know. Yeah,
so
beautiful.
How did you set up, like, was that an existing, I'm saying biodome, like it's a Pauly Shore movie, but I don't know what you call it.
No, it was basically it's kind of like an oversized sort of igloo, but it was clear, you know, so because there's a lot of wind there, and then the temperatures, and we had heaters in there, so it's just kind of like a little makeshift cool looking modern-esque tent.
So you made it for the gig.
So they whoever,
the scientists.
Yeah, the scientists probably put it together for us. But it was cool because you can see the areas around you and you're playing in the elements, but at the same time we didn't have amps. We were playing, everyone was on headsets. So you're not interfering with the natural surroundings.
So you're not making loud noise to mess up the caribou that are up there, whatever.
Well, yeah.
Whatever it is. The Yeti.
The Yetis, the Bigfoots.
Leave the Yetis alone, Metallica.
Exactly.
So you guys are all wearing headsets like we're wearing now, and that's what you're hearing?
Yeah, basically. But it was amazing because even the penguins there aren't afraid of man because they don't know to be. So they come up to you and kind of hang out. It was really cool. And the whales would come up, like, you know, 3 feet away, you'd be in these zodiacs, and they'd come up and swim next to you.
No kidding.
It was really special. And just even things like icebergs, you know, these massive, incredible icebergs, incredible sculptures, you know, just really.
It's interesting that you said that the penguins came up to you and the whales came because they didn't know.
They're not.
They're supposed to be afraid of man.
Well, penguins in particular, you know, it was, yeah, they just kind of check you out and they're like, wow, you know, who are you? What's your story? And I think, hey, what's going on, buddy? You
know? That is unbelievable that you guys can say that you did that. I mean, what an experience that you've had. And that's something I love about Metallica, and you mentioned a little bit, is that there's no rules for Metallica. You guys do whatever you want, you know, and that's, it's like if fans like it, you don't like it, we're still going to do this.
Right.
And even that's what you're doing now with the documentary you're making on Jaco Pastorius,
correct,
which is such an interesting character because most mainstream people don't know him. Mm-hmm. But I'm a bass player as well. Grew up, you know, Cliff Burton was my guy, Steve Harris.
Oh, right on.
But I would always hear, I could play like the first three Metallica records. At least I thought I could,
right.
except for like, you know, Anesthesia, of course. But I would always hear Geddy Lee talking with Jaco Pastorius. But I never really listened because I was jazz stuff. But obviously a big influence on you that you felt moved to do a whole documentary on him that you wrote, produced, directed. Tell us about it.
Well, produced. Basically, I mean, the short version is that, again, Jaco had massive influence on players like Geddy Lee, Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Jaco also, he's been praised by John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin. And he's just one of those players that comes around very rarely that is just really entrenched in composition. So he's very special on that level. But also he's a showman, he's a performer. So he's got an incredible stage presence, but then he's got a unique sound. Like Hendrix had a unique thing going on as well. And I was fortunate to have seen him play back in 1979, and I saw him about three more times after that. With the Weather Report twice, and then he had a band called the Word of Mouth Big Band, and then he had kind of a scaled-down version, which were the Party Animals. You know, after a while, he had, you know, he couldn't kind of tour around with the massive band, and he put together kind of a makeshift version of it, which was pretty badass, and it was actually more rocking, you know, double kick, and this guitar player, Mike Stern, who was
amazing. This is like the late 70s?
This was, at that time, that would have been in the early 80s
when
I saw that, but I did see Jaco in the late 70s, so 79 and 80, the Playboy Jazz Festival. But that's the whole point of this, is that, you know, he played on Ian Hunter's All-American Alien Boy album, which brought sort of awareness to him. People like David Bowie wanted to work with him.
Came more mainstream.
Yeah, and then he just, you know, I mean, he did an incredible album with Joni Mitchell, a few albums actually. 1976 was a big year for him because he sort of came out of nowhere and he did all, like, I don't know, seven albums or something? Was it, you know, like, yeah, five albums. And, you know, Al Di Meola, who's just a full shred guitar player, played on you know, on his album. And then he played with, you know, like Joni Mitchell, which everyone viewed as sort of a folkish kind of singer. But the music they made was really unique and special. So he had no rules. I mean, if you listen to the first solo album, there's a song called Come On, Come Over, which is super funky, you know, like as funky as anything you've ever heard, you know. But then he'd turn around and he'd play like a solo composition with just harmonics, you know, Portrait of Tracy. So it's just really well-rounded.
Was he a direct influence on you?
So, in fact, The Infectious Grooves was 100% inspired by Jaco.
Gotcha.
I mean, I wrote those songs with Jaco sort of.
What would Jaco do? WWJD, right?
What's that?
WWJD, what would Jaco do?
Oh, what would Jaco do? I mean, you know, if he was at the show, again, he would probably jump in the slam pit and do his thing.
He had some mental issues that kind of led to an untimely demise, right?
Right. You know, over time, you know, back then people weren't aware of bipolar disorder or things like that as much as they are now. So something that would have been preventable, you know, with medicine, medications or whatever. And that's why even I've learned so much from this project. I've learned to respect people a lot more, you know, even the homeless and everything.
Yeah, because he lived on the streets for a while.
He did. And you know, it at the same time, you know, what really I was impressed by when I saw him play and his vibe. I mean, just like me, he grew up, you know, in Florida, though, but I grew up by the ocean. Mm-hmm. I surf. I mean, I have mad respect for the ocean.
For Mother Nature.
Yeah, and all that. And he was a connection to that as well. You know, he was always, you know, at the beach. You know, in the film, you see a lot of Frisbee because...
that was big in the 70s, yeah, right? Frisbees.
He was really, really into that and body surfing and all that kind of stuff, you know? So the connection through that sort of existence, you know, just nature in general, and then music. And
you felt a connection through music and through nature.
Yeah, right? And I feel the same way, you know, and in my lifestyle. But at the same time, some of the characters that I knew from skateboarding, a lot of that, we have an area called Dogtown, which is the west mm-hmm. side of Los Angeles. And a lot of those dudes were just incredible daredevils. They were geniuses on their board. And I feel like Jocko is like them, you know, like mm-hmm. Tony Alva, Jay Adams, all these guys. You know, they can be dangerous. They can, you know, but they're wild and crazy. And not, I'm not even just talking about on a skateboard. I mean,
just in
general,
life. Did you skateboard?
Yes.
You're probably not allowed to anymore, though. Right?
No, I my son skates like crazy now, but I surf still. But
all Metallica members not allowed to skateboard.
I stopped skateboarding.
Remember after James broke his arm twice, I think it was.
Right, he did. Yeah.
So you felt this connection with Jocko, and then what made you decide, like, I got to get this guy's story out there?
So about 19 years ago, I met his son, Johnny Pastorius, the eldest son.
Mm-hmm.
And
because Jocko died in 85 or so?
He died in 87.
Okay, 87. Yeah.
And Johnny, you know, enjoyed Suicidal Tendencies music and was a fan of what I was doing, you know. And I came through town finally with Ozzy Osbourne, and that would have been Fort Lauderdale. I came through. And we became really great friends. And the first thing I said to him was, you know, one of the first things I said, you know, your dad, you know, people got to learn about mm-hmm. him and mm-hmm. know his story. And I mean, outside of just the jazz community, I said, because, you know, I mean, so many players, you know, whether they're, you know, gospel musicians or heavy metal,
player or whatever, yeah.
Heavy metal musicians, I mean, punk rock musicians, there's so many people that just... look up to your dad, I told him, and his story needs to be told. And yeah, we're going to, you know, someday. And, you know, long story short, you know, about 5 years ago, I jumped on board with him and another guy by the name of Bob Bobbing, and we started working on the project. And I guess it's pretty soon I sort of inherited, you know, the production side of it. And around 4 years ago, I connected with my director, Paul Marchand, who is really incredible. I call him a trench guy because he's been in the trenches in this project
mm-hmm.
For a long time. He was involved in a film called Good Hair by Chris, that he did with Chris Rock, which is hilarious.
You fit in that category.
Yeah, I do.
Good Hair.
You got to check that out. Really great film. And Big River Man, I believe. Yeah, and... you know, it's so having, you know, Paul on board, who's really incredible filmmaker, and being able to bring this thing to life and the journey that we've been on with this has been
so. I'm assuming you probably called some of the guys like Getty and you mentioned Flea. Are you calling them yourself? Say, hey man, can you do an interview or?
Well, what happens as a producer, you have to find a way. You know, mm-hmm. So Getty, of course, I had connections through management mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So I had to sort of channel my energy. And he's not an easy guy to get to, you know.
Right.
I mean, even though there's mutual respect. But finally, you know, I think it took about a year. And once you get to him, they're like, absolutely.
Of course.
And
you don't even know if it's going to even get to him at first. Right. It's going through the line of people first, right?
Yeah. And he was, you know, just completely into it.
Who was the biggest name that you had?
Well, Sting was a biggie.
That's a good one.
Yeah, Sting and Carlos Santana. Carlos was pretty easy because his office is not too far from Metallica headquarters, and he's a cool guy anyway. So Joni Mitchell was someone. Yeah, she's huge. She's someone that came in really in the last year. So over the course of 5 years, we thought at different points during those years that we were really close to being done. And then we realized for whatever reason, something would get derailed in the project. And now I know why. And it's almost like things do happen for a reason, because in this last year, you know, we got Joni Mitchell, we got a lot of never before seen mm-hmm. photographs from Sony.
The word is getting out about the project, so more people are coming.
Right. And then an incredible, actually, Jaco's favorite bass player is a guy by the name of Jerry Jamat, and Jerry played with Aretha Franklin, B.B. King,
those guys.
Dwayne Allman, all these guys. You know, that film. There was a film made that's out right now called Muscle Shoals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was actually like the studio guy there.
The
Muscle Shoals guy before those guys. He's like the Yoda of that crew. and he moved to LA by coincidence, you know, a little over a year ago, and people didn't even know if he was alive anymore. Mm. You know, this guy's a legend.
Wow.
So these are the treasures that came in just in the last sort of 12 or 14 months. And then once we got them involved in the production, then we realized, okay, now we're ready mm-hmm. to be finished, you know, and at the time, you know, 3-4 years ago, you know, it wouldn't have been as good. And then also, you know, we've also had a soundtrack. We're having a soundtrack release later in the year with Sony. But last year for Record Store Day, Omnivore put out a really great
soundtrack.
An album, well, not a soundtrack, but an album. And that music is featured in the film, but it was his demo recordings of his first album. And that was something that had been, hidden away.
In the vault.
Nobody knew about it. And all of a sudden that became a reality. So all these treasures, you know, just in the last, you know, year and a half.
And you've put up a lot of money for this, but you're also doing a crowdsourcing thing through Pledge Music for people to kick in for extra stuff.
Right.
And that's, we'll give all the details of that, but you can get a Skype call with you, and get a bass lesson. I mean, you really believe in this, man. This is a passion project for you.
Right. You know, a lot of people have stepped forward to be involved in the crowdfunding campaign. I've invested a lot of money in this, and as you probably know, I mean, making films, documentary films as well, is really an expensive journey, you know, when you want to do it right and mm-hmm. of quality. And I'm a very ambitious person. I lead with my heart, so I'm just like, I want to dive when I get passionate about something, I want to dive in head first and just run with it. And that's what I have done in this project over the years. And at a certain point, it was like, wow, okay, I do have a wife and two kids, and I always say,
Rob, send more money.
It's probably getting old now. You know, it's like I didn't write Sandman. Okay, I wasn't on the Black Album. That would not be me. Okay, but
the Lulu royalties aren't as big as the Black Album royalties.
Exactly. So you know. But the beauty of it is we're at the finish line now. You know, it's we're not far off, so we're really just getting into post-production. And
when do you want to plan and release it?
Well, we're going to release it this year, but we also have been offered a few events and a handful of film festivals, so we want to nurture those as well, because it's good to have a film like this appear.
And this is the type of story that like a Sundance would go for, because it's a very, you know, jazz is a very kind of hip thing that the critics like.
Yeah, but the thing is too is when you see the film, style of music becomes a non-issue because it's the story.
Sure.
And also when you see him, you go, oh, this guy, you know, he's mm-hmm. he's like a Hendrix or something.
Yeah.
You know? He's such an incredible, genius of a musician.
No one's ever played like him.
Yeah, I mean, there's just you know, there's something that's really special about him. And then again, the life story is very, very important. So, you know,
did you ever see the Anvil movie?
Oh yeah, I connected with Sasha.
Okay. Sasha Gervasi, who's the director of that film.
And we talked about my film. We also connected with Morgan, who
Spurlock?
Yeah. No, Neville. Yeah.
Okay.
20 feet from Stardom, right?
Okay, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
You know, Academy Award winner last year. We met with him, and And even Sam Dunn, I hung out with Sam a little bit.
Did who, the Metal Evolution.
In the Rush documentary.
Right. Cooper won.
And Alice Cooper, the most recent. Mm-hmm. And everybody, you know, they're all Jocko fans, and they all, you know, advised me to a certain degree on, you know, getting involved in a film like this and the route you would take, especially with the music connection as well.
And that's a good thing, too. Like you said, after a while, a good documentary is a good documentary. It doesn't really matter what the subject is. If you hook people, it can be about, you know, flora.
Yeah,
you know, the craziest florist in the world, but it's gonna grab you.
Yeah,
you know?
It's funny because I remember Scott Ian's wife Pearl. You know, no disrespect I share with the world. She wasn't a huge Rush fan, okay, but she saw the film that Sam Dunn made, and she
absolutely
not saying right. that she turned into a Rush fan, but she definitely enjoyed the movie and had mad respect. For them.
For the story, right.
For the story, yeah. Right.
We're here with Robert Trujillo from Metallica, and as you're just hearing, Robert's the producer of the upcoming Jaco Pastorius documentary, and Rob's used a lot of his own money to finance this project. It's a passion project for him, but it's such an incredible story that he's telling. He does need a little help to get it across the finish line, though, as we talked about, as we're going to be talking about. You can help Rob out by going to pledgemusic.com/projects/JacoTheFilm. And Jaco is spelled J-A-C-O. Pledgemusic.com/projects/JacoTheFilm. We'll have more details on that coming up. We got more stories from Rob, including his 2-day Metallica audition, his update on the new Metallica studio record. So much more to talk about, but right now.
All right, we're sitting here in the studio across the way from Rob Trujillo. Now, you know, you talk about Jaco being a big influence. When you were growing up, I mean, it's funny to me that you played in Ozzy, you played in Metallica with two of the greatest bass players of all time, with mm-hmm. Geezer Butler and Cliff Burton. Did you grow up a fan of both those guys?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm that's the thing about me. When I was a kid, I was luckily I had parents that were at an age where they could turn me on to the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin. And my mom was into Motown and James Brown and all that. So I was listening to all the funk rock and all that good stuff. But at the same time, I had friends that had older brothers that were into Black Sabbath. And, and also then punk rock came into the mix too. So I was embracing all that music of all styles. And that was a beautiful thing about the 70s is there were no rules.
Yeah.
So you could go to... You would go to an Ozzy Osbourne show in the early 80s, but then that same week you'd go see Weather Report with Jaco.
Sure.
You know,
or you'd see 38 Special touring with Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I remember, you know, I didn't live far from the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, and that's where I first saw Weather Report mm-hmm. with Jaco Pastorius. And I remember seeing my friends there that were, you know, surfer skateboarders. I was like about 14 years old. But at the same time, you know, you'd see some of those same people you saw at the Black Sabbath show, you know, the week before,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the way it was. That music, too, you know, the jazz rock stuff was very popular at that time. Mm-hmm. And it was so it was a different sort of audience that could be chameleons. You know, you would go into all these different shows. You didn't have any real rules to what you were supposed to, mm-hmm. you know, to go check out. I mean, I remember the bass player for Suicidal Tendencies, Luigi Mayorga, and we're talking institutionalized, joined the army, war inside my head.
Era, yeah.
Yeah, he was there. Yeah, dude. Yeah, I remember Jaco, you know, Santa Monica Civic. Yeah, I was at that show too. So it was just, that's what it was about.
And dudes were just music dudes.
And he had that impact. I'm not going to say other musicians of that, mm-hmm. of in the jazz realm had that impact because they didn't, but he did. He had that impact.
I wonder if Cliff was a Jaco fan. He must have been. He must have known of him.
He's mentioned, I've seen that he's mentioned in the book. He was actually a Stanley Clark fan, and Stanley Clark was some would say was a rival to Jaco, they were like best friends, but they were shredding.
Both fretless bass players, shredders.
Well, Stanley wasn't a fretless player, but he brought the bass to the forefront, mm-hmm. and he brought that edge and attitude in the playing and also in the composition. And Jaco, you know, again, Jaco, everyone says, oh, fretless, but he, of course, fretless is what he's most known for, but he did play fretted too. And he, probably half the time he was on his fretted.
Yeah.
But, But, you know, those are the guys that, you know, after sort of the Jack Bruces and John Entwistles, you know, and, you know, of course, Geddy Lee throwing that mix too. But they were the pioneers of bringing the instrument.
Well, and that's what you're talking about. Geddy loves Jack Bruce. He loves Jocko. He loves, you know, he loves those guys that you mentioned, John Paul Jones. So it's just a good player is a good player.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. And then when you take the performance side and you know, and bringing that excitement, you know, that's another aspect of being a musician, you know, and especially in rock.
You know, and something that's never happened in rock that I always think about is it's something that happens in sports teams all the time. You're playing with Ozzy, Newsteads, and Metallica.
Oh, yeah.
They traded
For a minute.
For Trujillo, right?
For a minute, right.
Yeah. Tell us about that. I mean, you're playing with Ozzy. It's obviously a plum gig, one of the greatest gigs of all time. But I want to ask you a question about that, too. You're playing with Ozzy, and I'm sure Sharon came up to you, and you and Mike Borden have to re-record the rhythm tracks for Diary of a Madman and Blizzard of Oz.
There was about 10 bass players that I think tracked on
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it wasn't just
I don't even know.
Because it was there, and it's gone. Now it's back though. Like what? How would you, is that? Like, you have to paint a mustache on the Mona Lisa? Did it feel weird?
You know, I don't even remember because it was so long ago. The you know, what I can say about that time was that, you know, number one, nothing can ever replace the original recordings. I mean, Bob Daisley is also a favorite player of mine. He played with a pick, but I mean, that guy, I mean, it sounded like he's playing with his fingers. Super funky.
Great fills,
too.
The
stuff that he did, you know, with Rainbow, actually. I mean, oh my gosh, incredible. You know, I don't know why that happened at the time or
there was legal issues or whatever.
You don't ask. You probably know more about it than I do. And you know, to me, it's a blur, and I'm just glad that the original
they're back,
and that's the most important thing.
But you're an employee for Ozzy, so it's like, Rob, we want you to play these songs, and you play them. I mean, as any employee does, right? That's basically how it works.
You know, you do the best you can, and I love Ozzy and Sharon, and always, you know, again, do the best I can for Ozzy and Sharon,
and
that's pretty much the you know what it is. But you know, I've been blessed in my life because I've you know, like you said, working with Ozzy, working with you know, Mike Muir and Suicidal Tendencies.
Black Label with Zach.
Yeah. In fact, it's funny with Zach. You know, I remember we were in New York on tour with Ozzy, and he actually goes, "I got a gift for you." And he hands me this T-shirt, and it's a Jaco Pastorius T-shirt that he bought in the street, you know,
because
he was a fan too.
He loves John McLaughlin too.
He's into all that and Al DiMeo and all the wild stuff. But he hands me this shirt. So it was actually, you know, Zach Wilde who gave me my first Jaco Pastorius T-shirt.
There you go, brother. Bottom line is, I want you to have this.
There you go, man. It's for you.
Yeah. Love you, brother.
Wear it with honor,
Father Robert.
Pride.
Father
Robert.
So how did you? How did you hear about the Metallica audition when you're in Ozzy? Because that's a pretty damn plum gig, right?
Well, basically, kind of weird thing. Kirk, a mutual friend of Kirk's and mine, had reached out to me to take him and Kirk surfing. They were going to be rolling through SoCal in an RV, and Kirk wants to surf. And do I have any advice on local spots? I said, sure. Well, I'll take him. So we went surfing for about a week. And he and his crew from the Bay Area camped out in this RV and you know, like a down in Manhattan Beach, up in kind of Malibu area we surf. And it was really great. And an interesting thing is we didn't talk about music much. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were just stoked
on
surfing and being in the ocean. And
it's always cool, too, to meet another guy who's into something. It's because surfing's not the biggest pastime. Right. So you meet another dude. It's like, you like surfing? I like surfing.
Yeah, we connected. Yeah. And he, you know, he had been spending a lot of time in Hawaii. But we connected and bonded through surfing. And then literally, I don't know, must have been a year later or maybe a little less. I'm actually on a surf trip in Tahiti. And back then, you know, we didn't have the cell phone, so I'm just checking my voicemail.
The tape.
And it's actually Lars and Kirk, and Lars like, hey, man, come down and jam. Come up and jam with Metallica, you know? It's like,
come and jam with Metallica.
You know, I think you had a few,
good for the show.
Exactly. I think you had a few cocktails, too. But so I remember I was arriving on, I think that would have been on a Wednesday. I was coming back to California on a Friday, and on a Saturday I was going to Mike Borden. Mike Borden was the drummer in Ozzy's band at the time, drummer for Faith No More.
And a good friend of Cliff Burton, too.
Great friend of Cliff Burton, great friend of mine. Yeah, I mean, he's
the bandmate.
He's the godfather of my kid, you know, Ty. So, you know, we're really close. And I would always crash out at his house when I would go up to San Francisco, you know, for whatever. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, I'm going up there for his birthday, and Lars finds out, and he's like, oh, that means you can come and audition on Monday, you know? And I'm like, okay, I'm, you know, flying in on Friday. I'm going to San Francisco on Saturday, and I'm going to audition for Metallica one day later. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
But, interesting side note to my audition. It was a two-day audition. The first day I was sort of a fly on the wall, which was really interesting and strange. And I'm talking about from like 11 till 11 at night.
How do you mean? Just
kind of hanging around.
Okay, gotcha. You know? Yeah.
It's like in the control room. You know,
were they auditioning other guys? Or
No. Each bass player had their day or 2 days.
Just to hang to see what the vibe is as a dude, right?
Because, you know, when you're joining a band, you have to – which was one thing to be able to play the material, but you have to get along with
the
players.
The hour on stage is fine. It's the other 23 hours that you have to put up with each other.
Exactly.
That's more important.
You know, that's really important. Yeah. So, you know, at the end of the night on that first day, Lars is like, hey, man, you know, let's go grab a cocktail, you know? And I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, we ended up hanging out and drinking until about 5 in the morning.
I kid you not.
What's that?
Just
he and I hanging out, listening to some of the new stuff at the time, and it was cool in one way because he's a Viking. The guy's a warlord, and back then he was just, you know, when he needed to, he could turn that on. And the funny thing is, 9 in the morning, the dude's up and he's on like a treadmill or something. I mean, I'm like in pain and my head's pounding. So it's the Tuesday and I got to play on this day. And that was back in the day, the era when they had a guy called Phil Toll.
Mm-hmm.
And they were
the doctors.
And I'm just, my head's pounding. And I got to play. You know what I mean?
You're a doctor. You got any medicine?
And I'm just like, this is, I don't even know if he's a doctor. But,
right, yeah.
But at the time, I was just thinking to myself, oh, man, what did I do? And, you know, and that's when, so when you see Some Kind of Monster and you see me wearing that brown Armani t-shirt, that's not my shirt, man. That's Lars's shirt.
Where was your shirt?
Well, it was probably in my car, dirty and with smelly from
vomit the, on it.
You know. But, but, you know, so I always laugh at that when I see that one scene where I'm playing, I think I'm playing Battery or something.
Now, did you know Battery? Did you have to study it?
Well I knew some of the Metallica songs just from, you know, everybody, every bass player in you know,
in
heavy
world,
metal
right?
music knows some Metallica. And that was a song that I knew fairly well. But, you know, once you get there, they want you to play, hey, play Sad But True or play this or that, and you start kind of improvising through some of that. But I think what was important to them was the feel and also, you know, the person, you know what I mean? So the feel, they were impressed with the feel.
They talk about the monster, too, about how you play with your fingers.
Oh, yeah.
Which was something that Cliff did.
Yeah, fingers were, you know, were, I guess, more important to James, you know.
Why is that?
I don't know. I mean, it's different. You know, fingers, there's a certain attack and a feel and a dynamic to the sound or the flow of a finger player. But then, I play with a pick, too, sometimes. Not I don't play in Metallica with a pick, but I mean...
You can play with a pick if you
need
to.
I'm not a good pick player, you know what I mean? Pick is cool, too. So it really just depends on...
That feels so tight and chunky, you would think that you got to be locked in with him, right?
You got to lock in. Yeah. But the good thing is well, again, it's sort of trial by error. Like when I first joined the band, there was so much galloping, you know. Like a battery.
Battery, you know?
A lot of galloping. So right away I had to sort of revamp and retool my my technique. You
because
know?
If you're looking at Steve Harris' finger technique, it's a little bit not sloppy, but it's a little bit more open. Whereas with Hetfield, if you've got the gallop, you've got to be in there.
You got to be in the pocket. So I immediately had a lot of adjustments that I needed to make, and which is good because I always like a challenge. It's funny, when I worked with Jerry Cantrell, I had to go the opposite direction. I had to actually learn to play simple, and Jerry is an incredible composer, and you know, his bass lines, you know, a lot of the stuff that he comes up with, it's all mood. Mm-hmm. Each note is like a statement,
right?
But it's a statement in simplicity.
Sting's bass playing is like that too.
Probably, it's very, very tasteful. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of guy, like I was just saying the other day to James, we were messing around with a kind of a slow little jam, and it was just him and I, and it's like you have to get yourself in a certain headspace, because it's like the note that you're playing, you can't hide anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, it's
for a slower jam,
rings, and it's all about the dynamic, how you're hitting that note, and you know, it's like you're hitting it too soft, whatever, you know. There's, and it's something that you really have to feel when you play slow material. Mm. You know, a song like "Day That Never Comes." I mean, that might have been the hardest song for me to play.
Why is that?
On Death Magnetic, because of the simplicity. Because each note, the way it rings out, you know, the choice of notes, the phrasing, you know, what you play something melodic in there, you know, it's got to be right to fit.
When
in
you
there.
Track those songs, do you come up with all the bass lines, and or does James say, "Why don't you try this?" Or do you say, "Here's what I got," work together on it?
Yeah, I mean, we you know, whenever we're you know, being creative, you know, you're playing your instrument as a bass player. You know, I do what I do, and I mean, that's why I'm there.
Why you got the gig?
They want me, you know, to do what I do. Hopefully, it's up to par. You know, but it's mostly that. You know, you take command of your instrument, but in saying that too, you know, any type of song that you create, you know, if you have an idea in your head or whatever, you
as the songwriter,
you can say, you know, but collaborative. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever it's anything's collaborative, you can always suggest. Anybody can. It's funny because back in the old days with the Infectious Grooves, you know, we would jam. You know, jamming was going to become the song. The jam
that's how you
was
the
song. Yeah, it was like, you
that's
know,
how the Peppers do it, too.
Yeah, and really capturing the moment, you know, was always that. So, you know, for me as a player, you know, I just feel, that, again, you know, going back to feeling blessed and honored to work with my heroes and good friends, you know, all across the board. I've been fortunate in that journey, you know. When I got the call to join Ozzy's band, when I found out that Mike Bordin was going to be playing, I was just, like, you know, beside myself, because he was my favorite drummer at the time, you know, and... you know, so it's, yeah, I've been very fortunate.
When did you find out that you had the Metallica gig? Like later that day, or did they take some time?
No, it took time. I mean, it is so long ago.
Like, that guy's really
good. It's
going to
be 12 years. Yeah. I mean, it's 12 years coming up in February. But
they were saying that guy's really good, but he's hungover.
Well, that
and he's wearing a brown shirt.
Even after that, I mean, after
you had to come back again.
No, after that is when I, you know, but it was a few months. It was some distance in time before actually got on stage at San Quentin. It was, you know, there was
what were you
time.
Thinking
it after? Wasn't like the next, it wasn't like the following week, okay, you know, you I'm on stage in San Quentin.
What were you thinking after your audition? Did you think you did good, or were you just another day?
I was thinking I did the best I can. Find me a bed because I need to sleep. And
and who cares what happens?
You know, I was just honored and pleased that I was asked to come up and play. I mean, and that's all you could ask
did
for.
Did you
in
get
that
any like clues at all? Did you ever like email Kirk and say, "Hey, what's up, dude"?
No, nothing like
just
that.
Just left it alone.
I kind of feel that. In life, for the most part, you know, it's like you got to just do the best you can and be the best you can,
right?
And whatever happens,
go from there. What did Ozzy say when you told him that you had the gig? Was it hard?
No, I mean, I think it's always hard, but he, if I remember correctly, he actually called. I think I still have the voicemail tape somewhere.
A lot of voicemail tapes on this interview.
A lot of voicemail tapes. You know, I go in my storage and I go, oh, wow, look at this.
It's a box set someday.
Let's listen to it. No, he congratulated me pretty much. You know,
he knew that it was not bigger and better things, but it was a hell of an opportunity for you.
Yeah.
He did the same with Mikey Inez, too, when he got the gig with Alice. He said, right. You know, you gotta go do your thing, right?
Yeah.
When you were learning the songs from Metallica, what were the hardest ones to learn for you?
Hardest ones for me, let's see, because there are a lot of hard songs in Metallica.
Because Cliff Burton's style is deceptively... I mean, there's a lot of hard stuff lurking underneath this. Because the first couple of Metallica covers aren't really produced very well bass-wise. You hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, you know, with Cliff, he's, to me, it's like there's sort of a spectrum there. There's the classical influence, there's the attack and the attitude and the edge of the punk kind of side, you know, which is very, very there, very apparent, and a percussive element because, you know, he hits the strings pretty hard, you know what I mean? So there's that, the edge of that technique as well.
I was found his bass lines were lurking under the surface like a big shark. Come up a bit, you know?
It's kind of like a, you know, like martial arts or something.
Yeah. Bam, 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 bam. Yeah, and then disappear.
Well, it's like Geddy Lee, you know, Geddy's, you know, his technique is very strong as well and very punchy, but also melodic, you know, and a lot of that melodic sort of terrain, I think that could be inspired in a lot of ways by a lot of those players that we're talking about.
Right, with Jocko, you know, and Stanley Clarke.
Yeah.
Was there a certain Cliff song that was harder for you to figure out? What the hell is he doing here?
You know, I mean, if you take a song like Battery, for instance, you know, the amount of gallop in that is very physical.
Especially during the guitar solo. It's crazy.
You know, it's tight and it's relentless. So you have to build up your stamina, especially live, because we tend to kind of speed things up a bit. So it's just, you know, like anything, you know, you just have to get used to it, and eventually it will feel comfortable or more comfortable.
Sure.
You know,
what were the differences between playing Cliff songs and playing Jason songs? The song that's basically recorded with a pick. Is there a different technique that you have to use, or you just do your thing?
You know, it's a lot of the stuff that Bob Rock produced was, you know, a bit more, obviously groove is very, very important on those songs, like Black Album songs, but then just really keeping it fairly simple and in that sort of style, you know, with Cliff, as we were talking about, it's a little bit more aggro, but tight, you know what I mean? So there are they are different styles. I still play with my fingers even on the Black Album material. Series, yeah. But the great thing about what I can say, I'm pretty proud of in being in Metallica these years, is being able to play, you know, like the Black Album in its entirety, you know, songs that were never played live,
right.
Like Struggle Within, you know, and you know, there was...
Yeah,
there
never
was,
played that live.
Yeah, yeah. There was about 3 songs on that album. And then there was even like Orion, you know, we play Orion a lot now. It's kind of an active
song. It's
become song
a set. Yeah,
yeah.
And become a highlight.
And that was a song that hadn't really been played years before.
And that's a Cliff, like, trademark, too.
Yeah, and Dyer's Eve. I mean, Dyer's Eve was a song, you know, off the Justice album, you know, Justice for All. That was a song that had never been played live as well. So the fact that here we are, you know, age 50, and we're, you know, attacking
these really fast tunes.
We're just attacking songs that hadn't been attacked. And in a lot of ways, I feel that that, you know, challenges us, and it actually makes this unit a better band, you know. And
well, I love the fact you guys change up your set list every night. That must keep your eyes open, keep your eye on the ball, stick on the ice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Know? So, you know, and that's the beauty of it is you know, we keep things exciting, and you know, it can't even help it. You know, it seems to always be that way. You know,
keep
just, we have fun doing what we do,
and you have to,
and we get along. You know,
you know what? You remember this? It was one of the first or second night of the 30th anniversary. And you had Apocalyptica, the cello guys,
right?
And there was some kind of an issue with the cello. Remember that they couldn't plug it in, and it wasn't getting sound, and it was like, dude, like 5 minutes and 10 minutes, and you started playing Anesthesia.
Oh yeah.
And that to me was, because like I said, look, when I was a teenager, I learned, you know, Kill 'Em All and those tunes, but that album and Ride Lightning, but Anesthesia, you can't play that, like, no one can play it. And you started playing it, it was great.
It was a very as you recall, it was a very uncomfortable moment. It was like, how many more jokes can James tell
about these Finnish guys and the cellos? And it was like packed house at the Fillmore, and the show was going great. And surprise, surprise, surprise! And it was starting to be a buzzkill. People were starting to murmur and lose interest.
Yeah.
So what was your mindset? I better do something.
Yeah, that was my mindset. Basically, I mean, I can't add much more to that. It was just one of those moments where it was like something needed to happen. And
had you played it before? I mean,
ever? I mean, I think again, most bass players, and I could be totally wrong. I mean, we learn what we like for the most part, if it's not too crazy, you know. So I knew enough of it at least to get a couple minutes out of it.
To calm the angry mob.
Yeah.
I think you even went to the fast part, Lars. You got behind the kit and you guys jammed on that for a bit too, yeah?
I don't remember. I think he might have played a couple measures of the beat.
My mind, it was perfect, Robert.
Oh, thank
it was
you.
Perfect.
Okay. Well.
A couple more questions. First of all, what's your favorite song to play live with Metallica? And also, what was your favorite song to play live with Ozzy?
Okay. Metallica would be, it depends, it varies night to night, but I think overall when I see Disposable Heroes on the list, I enjoy that song very much.
So you show up at the venue and Lars has made the set list, I assume it's Lars, and it's up on the wall?
It depends, you know. The set list definitely isn't put together till the night of the show, but that song is always fun. And the reason is because I love the groove. It's got a real funky feel when they go into the pocket,
boom, boom,
to the rhythm. Yeah.
Doo-doo.
And then there's and then it goes fast.
Yeah.
So there's all these shifts in there, and I enjoy that. With Ozzy, I'd have to say I enjoyed playing Believer. Believer is a really nice groovy tune, and Sweet Leaf was always fun.
Always a good one too, right? Did Ozzy ever switch up the set list, or was it basically 14 songs for the tour?
We kind of centered the show. I mean, they changed a couple here and there, but overall it was very consistent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Upcoming plans with Metallica?
Just you know, working hard, you know.
Writing.
Everyone's
on your case. When's the new record coming
exactly,
out?
Exactly, yeah.
It comes out when it's ready. Just be patient.
Yeah.
I've been talking to Lars about doing the show, and he says, I'll do it when the new record comes out. I said, so when is that? Like, he goes, probably about 2020.
Yeah.
Last thing of all, you know, have you heard, do you know this wrestler called Roman Reigns? Have you ever heard of him?
No.
Well, dude, he looks just like you.
Oh, I've heard about him. Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Have you seen
Are you
this?
Friends with that guy?
Yeah. It's funny, and this is a true story. When he first came in, because he's only been doing this for about a couple of years, as soon as he came in, I said, I like that guy. He looks like Rob Trujillo.
Oh,
I like
really?
Him already.
Oh, cool.
He's a Samoan guy, but he's got the same hair, same face, little goatee.
Right on. Yeah, I've seen you. A couple of people sent me.
There was actually something on Loudwire that said if Metallica made a movie, who would play who? And they had Roman Reigns playing the part of Robert Trujillo.
Right on, man.
Robert, it's great talking to you, man. Jaco Pastorius is the guy, and Rob's doing a crowdfunding. Pledgemusic.com/projects /Jaco the film. It's going to be amazing, and it's great to talk to you, man.
Thank you.
Get a chance to sit down. Next time we do Metallica, I'm not sitting in Lars's cockpit. I'm coming your side of the stage.
All right. Yeah, come join me on my side. You know, we have fun over there too. Less people, but
more fun, more room.
You can see better, and a little bit of breathing room.
You got beverages over there?
I can get some.
Okay, done. Yeah. I'm there.
All right.
When you're ready to buy a car, True Car is changing car buying forever. Yes, True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Every day, True Car users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings, and True Car users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, Download the True Car mobile app or go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Then it's the third step. Very simple. Take your guaranteed savings certificate to the True Car certified dealer for a better hassle-free car buying experience. Now, some features are not available in all states, but with True Car, you can save time, save money, and never overpay. Never overpay. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the True Car mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today. Go do it now.
Talk is Jericho.
Thank you so much to Robert Trujillo from Metallica. What a cool guy, laid back, SoCal surfer dude, and one of the greatest bass players of all time. Absolutely, very, very cool to have him in the studio. And listen, I want to see this Jaco Pastorius documentary. I want to help him finish the documentary. I want you to do the same thing. You go to pledgemusic.com/projects/JacoTheFilm. They've got some very cool giveaways depending on your donation level. You can donate and get a 30-minute Skype call with Robert. Talk to him about anything you want. You can donate and get an in-person bass lesson with Robert at the Henson Studios in Hollywood. That's pretty cool. Well, I might even take him up on that. Like I said, I used to be able to play every Metallica song up until Master of Puppets. I could do it. I still know how to play Trapped Under Ice. Listen, go to pledgemusic.com/projects/JacoTheFilm. They're trying to get the whole film finished in time to release it for Record Store Day in April. So kick in what you can. And much like Talk is Jericho, sometimes there's guests that you don't know, but you trust me. And you listen to the guests and you love it and you realize that there's a whole new world out there. If you are a musician, a metal fan, a rock fan, and you haven't heard of Jaco Pastorius, this documentary, this story is one worth telling. I want to see it. Robert wants to see it. So if you got any belief in Metallica or Robert Trujillo, trust him and then throw in a couple bucks. Trust me, throw in a couple bucks, whatever you can afford. We want to see this film get made. It's a passion project for Rob, and now it's a passion project for me as well. Pledgemusic.com/projects/JacoTheFilm. All right, another passion project. Fozzy headlining the Cinderblock Party World Tour 2015, continuing on with the Dirty Youth from the UK. We are starting March 4th in Belfast. Fast. We got a lot of shows in a row. You ready? 5, Cork, 6, Dublin, 7, Nottingham, 8, Wolverhampton, 9, Manchester, 10, Glasgow, 11, London, 12, Bristol, 13, Exeter, 14, Southampton, 15, Brighton. Finally a day off. Then we head over to Paris on the 17th. 18th is Pratteln in Switzerland, 19, Munich, 20, Mannheim, 21, Bochum. It's fun to say that. Bochum. You get your phlegm worked up in the back of your throat. That's all in Germany, France, Switzerland, England, Ireland, Scotland. I want you to come check us out. This is our biggest UK tour yet. If you've always wondered who Fozzy is live and haven't seen us live, now is your chance. You go to FozzyRock.com. You can find out all the information about all the gigs, get tickets, and the VIP packages for the best VIP experience you will ever, ever have. Come on down. We want to see you. And for those of you that live in this country, if you're in the Philadelphia area, you got a chance still to go to RFVideo.com and get your tickets for the Monday Night Wars debate, the great debate, Bischoff versus Pritchard with Jericho moderating this Sunday, January 25th in Philly at Dave and Buster's on Columbus Avenue. It's Royal Rumble weekend. This debate will be over in plenty of time for you to make it to the Rumble, so you need to do both. Trust me, if you're a wrestling fan, if you're a fan of a great conversation, of a great live experience, the great debate at Dave and Buster's in Philly this Saturday. 1 o'clock is when it starts. You can come do a VIP experience with me at 10 o'clock. Come say hi. Come meet me. Get your stuff signed. I'll be shaking babies and kissing hands, doing what I got to do. RFVideo.com for all ticket and VIP information. All right. Thanks to all of you once again for joining me. I know there's millions. Yeah, millions. Probably not, but there's getting there. I know there's hundreds of thousands of podcasts to schwoz from, yet you continue to schwoz mine. You know, I appreciate that. Thanks to all you guys for doing your shopping through my Amazon links. I appreciate that. Easiest way to support this show, so I can keep doing it for you for free for twice a week. You know how to find my Amazon link. Say it with me now, podcast1.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Eh? Then you click on Talk is Jericho. You see all three of the Amazon links in the UK, USA, Canada A. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cashola to the show. So we keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden challenges. You're just getting your shopping done. Help me out in the process. All right. Thanks to Rob Trujillo from Metallica. So excited about all things that are happening with them and happening here on Talk is Jericho. That's it for this week. But in the meantime and in between time, peace, love, and hugs. Stay hard, stay hungry, stay heavy. And on Friday, I got a very special guest, but I haven't recorded him yet. I haven't tracked him yet, so I don't want to say who it is just in case it falls through. But trust me, this guest is huge, and you will find out as soon as I get the interview in the can, signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours. You will know exactly who it's going to be, all right? So stick with me. Check me out on Talk is Jericho on the Twitter, and a big yeah, boy, to that.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.